Republicans to wake up. The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Welcome to a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. This program is supported by listeners, and we name names: Raymond Welch, Don Sisney, Gillian Hurst, and Wendy Bloom. Thank you for your voluntary subscriptions to this program. And if you're able and you'd like to help, just go to my website at peterbcollins.com. Click on the tab that says You Can Help. Our voluntary subscriptions start at $5 a month.
God had a name. What would it be, and would you call it to his face if you were faced with him and all?
Our intro music today from Joan Osborne. What if God were one of us? Would she or he sit in judgment of the behavior of mortals? Well, maybe, according to the Bible. Well, I have a room full of Presbyterians here today, and there is a fascinating struggle unfolding in the Presbyterian Church, the division here on the West Coast, the Presbytery of the Redwoods. And the Reverend Janie Sparr is in the studio with us today, and she has quite a fascinating history, working at the Metropolitan Community Church in San Francisco, drafted to Rochester, and she might tell us a little bit about that story. But she has performed marriages of people of the same sex, and this has brought her with an anonymous accuser before a panel that we'll hear a little bit about, because like you, perhaps, I am not familiar with the hierarchy of the Presbyterian Church USA and the way that they enforce their doctrinal rules. But I know I'm going to learn about that today. First of all, Reverend Janie Sparr, thank you for being here.
Thank you for asking me, Peter.
Now, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to minister to lesbians, gays, transgenders, and bisexuals.
Well, I have a wonderful former husband who loved me into loving myself, and two little boys that were 7 and 9 who loved their mother and said, "You are." And it's because of them that I could be here today. Because what I realized is being lesbian for me is such a tremendous gift. It has opened me in such a way it's hard to describe. It's a real God thing for me, because I think God keeps coaxing us until we can become who we really are. And it was really Jim and Jimmy and Chetty who really loved me into loving myself. And now, you know, my sons are 42 and 40, so they're grown men, but they have been with me all the way through. So it's been an amazing journey for our family. And I did the wedding of my former husband, Jim, to his wife, Jackie Sparr, and we have a tremendous family that's just opened up. Jim and Jackie and I have worked with families that are going through this. Jim just says, we got new information.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a wonderful journey for me, and we've created ministries then to help people learn this new information about themselves and to invite the church to see us as real people, because we are their children, their grandchildren, their family members.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an opportunity for the church to grow and to understand that it's not us and them, it's we together.
Yeah. Now, we're here in California, where a courageous federal district judge, just a week ago, overturned Proposition 8 as unconstitutional. It attempted to ban marriages outside of a male and a female. And Judge Vaughn Walker wrote a powerful ruling that was spiritual without being religious.
Exactly.
Because what he did was acknowledge equality. And he rejected discrimination.
Right.
Based on sexual orientation.
Right.
And I think it was powerful, you know, beyond the legal ramifications. I really invite people to find it through your favorite search engine. It's 136 pages. You don't have to read every word. But if you just start with his powerful conclusion and then look at the way he built the evidence, he basically showed that there was interest in discriminating between heterosexual couples and same-sex couples. How can we help educate religious leaders, including in your own Presbyterian church, that what Vaughn Walker basically determined is that times have changed and that the secular law must change with it, and in turn is your hope to persuade not only the leaders of your church but also broadly the congregations to embrace the message of Jesus, which was to love one another?
That's right. And everybody.
And there was no stricture there that said only love opposite sex.
Right. The process that I do is that I meet with heterosexual couples and same-gender couples. And what I do, it's opposite gender and same-gender couples. And what I do, I say, this is what we're working toward. And we're working toward, we do homework every month in which they come to me so that I really know them and they know me. And we delve deeply into their relationships about who they are, how they love, do they have support, what about their families, and what's their spiritual path, what might that be. And by the time we're done over a year, you can only imagine the intimacy and what we have learned, because I think, aren't we all about wanting people to love more and to love deeper so that relationships are healthy and mutual? So the church has a tremendous opportunity not to worry about what a person's gender is or what opposite or same gender, but how can we have a healthy relationship in a fractured culture? That should be the question, not what one's sexual orientation is. How can we love more? How can we do it better? So that's what I do. And so to help the church have that conversation, and when I travel around the country, when you meet in colleges and universities, they say to me, Jenny, we don't care what a person's sexual orientation, we don't care what your sexual orientation is. How can I have a healthy relationship in a fractured culture? Isn't that we help one another, reach out toward one another in a more mutual way? How do we do that differently than we do now? So I do lots of homework with people so that we can grapple together what that might mean for them.
So, Reverend Spahr, are we struggling with the last legacies of the Old Testament, the kind of black and white approach to God, a very fearsome God, and the literal interpretations of the Old Testament that many people use to justify discrimination against homosexuals?
Well, I want to say that we're not, as Presbyterians, we shouldn't be literalist. And as a good rabbi friend said to me, we don't take the Bible literally, we take it very seriously. And I think in the Old Testament, even the story, it's a story of faith. It's a story, it's a journey that we're all in the wilderness, that we all have moments in our life, and then there are moments of great clarity. And I think it's a tremendous story, the Old Testament, so I don't want to write that off at all. And certainly the New Testament has also been used to bludgeon us in a way, you know, so either Testament. But it's the story of faith of many of us on this journey in this life. And so to how to do that now, of course, we have so much more information about sexuality. We have so much more information about a lot of things. And I think for us to, what I find out is that the church has kind of framed us and defined us. And as a people rising up into our own selves, no longer can they define us as self-avowed unrepentant. We are life-affirming, God-affirming people. And that's what happens many times with those in power name people of less power. And what happens is when those people raise up and say, hi, we want to be mutual, with you. We want to serve with you. We want to share power with you. We could do this together, and it could be creative together. Then it happens. It's like saying, we're your sons, and we're your daughters. We're in your family. We're in every church, in every neighborhood. So it's, of course, the times have changed, and we have changed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I love God. I love people. I mean, it's where no more will I be defined in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I will be defined as myself and to Him faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to have that discrimination. It's, and that's what Judge Walker did. He just said, this is discriminatory.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And it's time for the church to stop. It's time for equality to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, I'm meeting you for the first time, but I don't find you confrontational. I don't find you scary. I find you to be a very warm and loving person who wants to extend that without the kind of phony limits that are enforced by the culture of denial.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we address this? Is it best addressed one-on-one, trying to change minds one at a time? Or can this be done at an institutional level?
Well, we have both and has to always go on at the same time. I think individual hearts are changed, certainly as people come out to their families and so on. That certainly is one way, but it's heterosexism we're talking about. It's institutional. And so how do we change institutions? And that's a larger program. So
mm-hmm.
one at a time, and then congregation by congregation, then certainly larger than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a worldview that we're trying to change,
mm-hmm.
because so much of the worldview has been defines us as less than and second class. And when you have that, violence also occurs,
mm-hmm.
where people, and I have seen that in the community where I've served, is where people have hurt our people and said it's because they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
No, no, no.
Now, Reverend Spahr, I was raised a Catholic and I don't practice. I think most of my listeners know that. But I am not anti-religion. And I have a high regard for the Presbyterian Church for its work on social justice.
Right.
We covered the Sabeel Conference, which I thought was groundbreaking in American. It was held in the United States, focused on the rights of the Palestinian people in the struggle with Israel. And so my perception, limited as it is, of the Presbyterian Church is that it's quite progressive. And certainly not a fundamentalist church like the Baptists or the Assemblies of God. So give me a little history from your perspective of the Presbyterian Church's approach to homosexuality, even before we get to the level of marrying same-sex couples.
Well, the church has been in a large, since doing education in 1978, began all this study, and even before that, where the two churches came together, the Southern Church and the Northern Church and so on. But we've been doing a lot of education throughout the years. And every time it comes up, more and more people are open, more and more people are changed. It takes a long time for institutions to change. Here it is up again for the General Assembly around ordination. Each time that we see that we're studied, people say, oh, for heaven's sake, just as you said, well, you're not too bad. When I've traveled the country, people have said, oh, my heavens, you don't have horns, lady. By God, you can preach, you know, something like that. But somehow or other, there's this myth around us about who people think we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to explode that myth into the gospel
mm-hmm.
of love and justice. And that's what we're about.
Now, you were among the first, or perhaps the first woman ordained as a minister in the Presbyterian Church. Is that right?
No.
No?
Other friends of mine, but I was ordained in 1974.
Okay.
But I held the first full-time position as woman pastor in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what was it like to break that ground?
Well, I think it's the same kind of thing. It's this myth around the same words that are used against women in ministry were the same words that are used against gay people. Listen to this. Licentious, promiscuous, all these incredible words that are used to define women. So it's a gender issue as well for me. And this is what we say. We look as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. We look at how people of color are framed. We look at how women are framed. And then we say, aha, so here we are. And it's those in power, again, define people of less power. And how do we eradicate these definitions around gender, around race, around class, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, around sexual orientation.
Yeah.
It's all mixed together now. See, that's the other thing. Everything's connected to everything else, the mm-hmm. isms. And so if we're just fighting for LGBT people's rights, we're not doing our job.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to be looking at race and class, everything else. Who else? See, I think that's what happened to me when I came out and I saw the framing. I said, who else is why? So for me to come out gave me a consciousness which is far bigger than I had.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helped me ask different questions. They say those, that frame the questions give the answers. Hmm? And so what we're trying to do is we all have the opportunity to be at the table and to ask the questions and to reframe and give different answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is all part of it. It's just not about gay rights.
Yeah. I made a reference earlier to Rochester, New York, and you were invited
yes.
to preach at a parish there, to mm-hmm. be a pastor.
To be on staff there. Mm-hmm.
And it produced a whole controversy. Tell us a little bit about that and how you dealt with it.
Well, I want to say before that, I had the wonderful opportunity to be at Metropolitan Community Church in San Francisco. And I fell in love with what it means for me to be who I am, as lesbian and Christian. All came together because what happened is I met a lot of other lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, and it was just so life-affirming and so God-affirming for me. It was like, so then when I came back to the church, it was like, yes, here I am. I was so excited, you know, and so not afraid or not just what a wonderful thing has happened. And so it's almost like the other way. You want to say, look at this wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is then when I interviewed with the downtown church, they were really curious, and they said, well, we may have a case of homophobia. And I said, well, I have a case of church phobia because I've seen what the church has done to so many of our people. And so we had this great interview, and I heard I was one of the final candidates. Mm-hmm. It was really quite wonderful. And the one that just absolutely slayed me, because I went around the room, and a lot of time when we're doing race work, we ask what would be wonderful about being, what would be hard, what would you want? And this one, at the last person, I went around the room, and I said, because what you have to stand when you interview me, are you ready to know all your secrets? Because when you talk about sexuality, people start coming out about lots of things. So that was when this one man looked at me and he said this, what would be wonderful, Janie, is if you came here. What would be hard is if my children never had the opportunity to know you and be taught by you. And that was it, Peter, for me. Because I was told I had so many youth groups that I worked with for so many years. And then when I was essentially denied, it was like I was told that I couldn't be with children anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't begin to tell you what that was like for me.
Yeah.
And then I had all these gay children that came. You see, I mean, it doesn't matter, but it was just this. So when he said that, and then this is the last thing I said to him, I'll never forget the interview, I said, if I am, in fact, the person that you choose, please don't call me unless you've really prayed and heard. Because if you haven't heard, don't call me, because I know what happens. What happens is it'll get hard here.
Mm-hmm.
And those people who are victims of oppression are soon blamed when it gets hard. So I just want to remind you of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, the question is, what's wrong with Janie Spahr? The question will be, what's wrong with a church that doesn't include its very own?
Yeah.
And that's the real question for me, mm-hmm. always. And so with the interview, and my God, then they called me as one of their four co-pastors with this amazing staff, very progressive, three women and one man. Usually it's three men and one woman. So, I mean, you can imagine. So they had done their gender work.
Yeah.
That's how they could call me. You mm-hmm. know, they had done their work. So had the presbytery. The presbytery had more women in that presbytery. And so they had dealt a lot with that. So what happened is then they said yes, the presbytery said yes, then the synod said yes, the courts, and certainly Beverly and Scott can tell you that, and then the high court said no.
Mm-hmm.
And from there then, this church was so incredible. They said to me, well then, Janie, will you come and be our evangelist? And I take that word very seriously, because an evangelist is someone who spreads the good news of God's love
sure.
for everyone.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did for 14 years, traveled mm-hmm. the country. It's nothing like an extrovert. But really, it was this
Wasn't it just a scam to pick up all the free miles?
Yes. But the people, again, the same reaction that you said, there were people who said, oh, but Janie, you're really real. And going through the South, going through the North, each congregation, everything, people came out to me about their children. They said, Janie, we've wanted to tell our church about our daughter. Or you'd go into a place and they'd say, but there's no gay people here. And then a person in their church who's one of their elders and so on would say, but I'm here. And Janie's going to go. I mean, so it was an extraordinary experience to see people mm-hmm. open their hearts and minds. And then teams. We believe in partnership and teams. So often I would go with heterosexual allies and friends and so on. And one particular was Jenny Davidson, who just died, who's 92, and was just an amazing ally and friend who commanded this tremendous respect. And then she'd introduce me. And I mean, you know, I was on her coattails.
Yeah.
I mean, it was quite wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But people opened. I think what happens is because when we tell our story, it's so real and so authentic that it does something. It changes the atmosphere of a room. I mean, people can disagree with you all they want. I mean, one person yelled at me and said, I hate you, Janie Spahr. I hate you for make me think about things I don't want to think about.
Wow.
And I said, thank you so much.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all kinds of situations where people were angry. One person spit on me. You are, you know, the devil incarnate, all that kind of thing. But and even in the bathroom, I remember one time washing my hands with this woman. I was like, how can you divide this church? And I said, well, it's prejudice that's dividing this church, ma'am. I don't want to divide this church. It's prejudice that's dividing this church in which you don't see us for who we are. That's what's really happening here. So it's been an amazing journey to travel this country. Certainly, Scott went with me. We went through Alabama. That was wonderful to see people just opening their hearts. We knew every gay person there. And this one time that we went, we said, being who you are is a gift from God. And some people put their heads down on the table and just wept that they had heard that they were good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
Yeah,
we've got to do better.
The Reverend Janie Spahr with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, on the 24th of August, you will start what could be a 3 or 4 day trial. And in a moment, I want to ask your lawyer associates here to help us understand the process. But could you just frame the issues? Why are you being brought before this religious court?
Well, as you know, from June 17th to November 4th, there were many marriages that were done, and many of my friends some I had done their holy unions and so on. Some of them I've known 20-some years. So they come again and say, Janie, we want to get married, and we want you to be. They asked me not only as their friend, but I had been their minister all along. And one thing I guess I want to say is, I mean, they asked me because I was a pastor, and they could have gone to a civil court, but they said they wanted me to do it. So I can't. What we do in the Presbyterian Church or in churches is that you have civil authority and then we pronounce. Okay, so I pronounce them in the name of the state and in the name of the church because I can't be bifurcated. This is who I am. I'm both and in that situation. So I think the issue is, it might have been fine that I said it as civil court, but I said it as a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So there's where the rub comes. Why did she have to say in the name of the church? I had to say in the name of the church because it's a matter of my faith and the matter of who I believe God is. So and the calling that I had. I served in the Castro area in MC for 2.5 years and met, you know, what I should say to people, your relationship doesn't count. You're not, you know, no. These are, it's just like I say, I don't care what your sexual orientation is, we're here to help people have healthy relationships.
Mm-hmm. Now, flanking you, you're lawyered up here, are two fine
wonderful
people. Beverly Brewster, who I have been acquainted with for many years, a neighbor of mine here in Marin County, and Scott Clark, who is an attorney and you referred to earlier from Alabama and traveled in the South with you. Welcome both to our program. Bev, let me start with you. Could you tell me, in simple terms, what are the charges and who is the defendant or who are the defendants in this religious proceeding?
Well, the charges were brought here against Reverend Jane Spahr as a minister of the Word and Sacrament, and she's being charged with representing that same-sex unions that she officiated at, that she represented that they were marriages. Mm-hmm. And the thing that is really unique about this charge is that the 16 marriages that are listed in the charge, in fact, were marriages. They were legal marriages in the state of California. And so Reverend Spahr is actually being charged with representing that these marriages were marriages. Mm-hmm. And they were.
Yeah.
And amazingly enough, this charge was sustained by the initial investigating committee and is being prosecuted in the Presbytery of the Redwoods, which is our local governing body in the Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm. Scott, if you would, could you explain for our listeners the legal structure here and the extent to which this case could be appealed if the decision is not to Reverend Spahr's satisfaction?
Well, it's you were talking earlier about Judge Walker's decision, and this is kind of the equivalent of that in a religious setting. So you have the local trial court that will hear the charges, and there are going to be seven commissioners who make the decision. They're a mixture of clergy and non-clergy. So they'll hear the testimony of the witnesses. They'll hear the couples tell their stories. They'll hear from Janie, from Reverend Spahr, and then they'll make the decision as to whether it's guilty or innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an appellate court structure that's set up within the church, kind of a larger regional level. We'll hear the first appeal, and then there's the equivalent of the Supreme Court, which we call our General Assembly.
Okay. And in each case, these are bodies of people. There's no single decision maker, like in the Catholic Church, where ultimately the Pope or his underlings would make a final decision.
Correct. And in each case, the panel is composed of people who are clergy and people who are non-clergy. So laity within the church make the decision.
And do you, as her attorneys, get to help shape those panels, or are those predetermined? In other words, can you make sure that there is diversity?
No, we can't. The panels are decided, and so we come before those judges. It's kind of like an appellate court, the judges mm-hmm. that sit there for a term,
right?
And hear the cases. So those would be the people. We can shape the arguments, and we can certainly present the case, and we intend to show them the faithfulness of Reverend Spahr's ministry.
Now, Bev, if I remember correctly, you worked as a prosecutor, didn't you?
Actually, no. I was a attorney, though. For many years, I was a trial attorney, and I did land defense work. So
okay.
I do have some experience on both sides.
All right.
Yes.
And do you wish you had some peremptory challenges here of the members of the commissioners who will review these charges?
Actually, we do know who our seven decision makers will be. They've been elected by the presbytery, and we feel very good about this panel. And I would have to say that our presbytery, the Presbytery of the Redwoods, has really been outstanding among national presbyteries in terms of supporting LGBT rights. Mm-hmm. So this is almost anomalous in a way that this case is going forward, because our presbytery has been so progressive in so many ways. And we did, in fact, just send an overture to the Denominational National Conference in Minneapolis supporting LGBT ordination. We also sent an overture supporting marriage equality. And so our local governing body really has many, many progressive ministers and elders, the non-ordained or non-clergy laity. Mm-hmm. And so we feel really good about the panel. We think that we'll have a very fair hearing. It's just that it's really hard to be going forward on this case right now in this setting where this many couples have their mm-hmm. marriages listed as if there's something wrong with them and their marriages in the eyes of the church.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's really painful about this, is that 16 couples have been listed as if, even though their marriages were legal in the state of California and they waited for a long time to get married legally in the state of California by Reverend Spahr, who was their pastor and the person who they had a very meaningful pastoral relationship with. And for the church to be bringing this case forward and bringing these couples' marriages up in a way that is saying that the church doesn't view these marriages as valid and worthy, mm-hmm. is very, very destructive, very harmful.
Now, Scott, as I mentioned, my background in the Catholic Church, there's a whole set of canon laws. There are courts that are set up inside the Roman Catholic Church. They all lead to Rome, where there's a, you know, a central review like a Supreme Court. But the canon law is something that's been developed over centuries. What is the equivalent in the Presbyterian Church that these commissioners evaluate the charges and claims that are presented before them?
Well, we actually have a constitution. And so kind of on the American model, there's a constitution that sets forth the governance of the church, but also there's a section that's called the Directory for Worship, and it has provisions about marriage. And so that one of those provisions is what's been invoked for the basis of the charge. We think that it doesn't include a prohibition, and the prosecuting committee thinks differently. Because the Constitution was written before same-gender marriage was even a possibility in most American states. And now it's a reality in five states and was for a time, well, maybe six. I mean, it was for a time in California, and now, yay, it is again. But that's the framework. But then also there's a sense that all of that is also governed by our faithfulness to the gospel. And that's really the larger framework. So it's interesting. They can bring charges either for a violation of Scripture or a violation of the Constitution. Here the prosecution has made no allegation that Janey has in any way violated Scripture. And as a matter of fact, the prosecutor at pretrial conferences has spoken very favorably and warmly about Janey's ministry. Janey didn't say this, but when she was in, the prosecutor did, that when Janey was ministering with the MCC Church in San Francisco in the 1980s, it was at a time at the early stages of the HIV/AIDS crisis when most clergy wouldn't even go into the hospital rooms of somebody who was living and then dying with HIV/AIDS. And the prosecutor presented this at our pretrial conference, and then she said, but Jane Sparr went in and she held these men and ministered to them. And that's the type of ministry that we want the commission to see. And we want them to affirm it. We want them to affirmatively state, this is a faithful minister who has really given her life to the service of God's children and the church.
Now, Bev, in comparison with a secular court, will you present witnesses to offer their considered opinions of the issues before us, which are, you know, does the constitution of the Presbyterian Church, or at least your Redwood Presbytery, permit same-sex marriage?
Yeah, we will have an expert witness. So we're bringing in one expert witness who is a biblical scholar and also an expert on Presbyterian polity, church law. And she'll be helping us to set forth for the panel really something that is probably familiar to some of the panel, but perhaps not all of them, which is the sad fact that so many of the Bible verses which have been cherry-picked out of the Bible and used against LGBT people to exclude them from church leadership and to fly in the face of marriage equality, to so much of the Bible that's been used to discriminate has been inappropriately used, has been taken out of context with real disregard for its socio-historic context. And so we do have a biblical scholar who will address that, who, for example, will explain that the one place in the Bible that is where Jesus talks about marriage and that is so often misused to say that Jesus says that marriage has to be between a man and a woman is actually a prohibition against divorce. It is not a definition of marriage as being between a man and a woman in any way that it would exclude same-sex marriage. So we will have that expert witness, and she will also speak to matters of the church constitution. So we think that we really have an excellent case and that we will be able to very conclusively show that Reverend Sparr did not violate the constitution and did fulfill all of her ordination vows.
And Scott, are these open proceedings? Could the public attend, and could the video crew that's capturing this today follow the proceedings?
The two-part question, yes, they're open and the public can attend. I don't think that the issue hasn't been raised with the court as to whether cameras would be allowed in.
I see.
So I just don't know on that. But they're absolutely open, and I understand from the commission, because we've had the Judicial Commission, we've had discussions about this, that they're committed to this being an open proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really encouraged by that, that the, mm-hmm. that in the learning process, together the presbytery has gotten to the point where that there's not an effort to close these proceedings, but to let as many people in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one more thing we've been talking, Janie's been charged and tried and acquitted before in this presbytery. So she, before marriages were legal, mm-hmm. charges were brought against her. We were in, we had a trial, and the PJC then, it was a different composition, but they found that not only was she innocent, but that what she had done were within the standards of ministry within this presbytery.
Mm-hmm.
And then the regional body reversed that, but the Supreme Court of the Presbyterian Church restored the acquittal.
Ah.
So we've been through this process before, and that's another reason why it's just so frustrating, because now the marriages are legal.
Yeah.
So they've got that basis, too, and it's just a shame that the church isn't really living into, and we hope it will live into, some of the things that it says it believes about inclusion.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to tell us where the trial will be held, in case listeners want to observe?
Sure. The trial will be held at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Napa,
mm-hmm.
which is on Salvador Avenue. I'm not quite sure of the street number.
Okay.
1226.
1226. Now we've got it. Great. Salvador Avenue. Now, Reverend Spahr, tell me your thoughts as you head into this proceeding. Did you operate with during the time that these marriages were legal in California, did you operate in any way that people might characterize as inappropriate or reckless? Or did you operate with the idea that you might be facing charges again and try to, maintain compliance with what you might have seen as the letter of the church law?
Well, again, Peter, these are people like the first couple, Sarah Taylor and Sherry Holmes, I've known for 20 years. I helped do... Well, the service for Sherry's dad when he died. I just did the service for Sarah's father. I knew their daughter from the time she was 7 years old. Sherry's sister had a heart attack, and so we were with her when she died. I mean, these are no casual relationships.
This is like a Vegas wedding chapel.
No, and like I say, I mean, these are heart friends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, many of these couples I have known. I've known their families. I've known their children. And I could name several others. But those that will testify, when you hear the story, everybody has God's story. It's all a part of God's story to me. And when you hear the authenticity and the love that they have, I mean, that's what I'm hoping in this trial, that as people, again, the people's hearts will be open again and they can hear, like it doesn't matter what your sexual orientation is, when you reach across and dare to love another, what's that like for you? And
mm-hmm.
how do we do it, and how can we learn from one another? I mean, and so we'll learn a lot from some of these couples about who they are and how they love and how they met. And I mean, with Sarah and Sherry, I saw them fall in love 20 years ago. So that was an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, like I say, imagine if they wouldn't have asked me.
Hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that would have been startling to me, just because and it finally becomes legal. So the church yells about that we are not committed. Then look at all these people that are committed.
Mm-hmm.
And then says, But wait, we don't know about this? I mean, what are we saying?
Mm-hmm.
What are we saying? You cannot have this kind of duplicitous, say what you mean.
Face this with, in some ways, a sense of joy at being able to open these doors and really establish what you view as an appropriate a process and recognition of same-sex couples, or do you resent being dragged through this process again? Since, after all, as Scott pointed out, you were ultimately vindicated in a prior proceeding.
Well, I think This is what, when I was the first time even considering in 1991 whether I would, in fact, do this work. And I called a friend of mine who has taught me a lot about race. And she said to me, Janie Spahr, she said, I have become curriculum for the Presbyterian Church. She said to me, are you called to be curriculum? And I think that was a wonderful question to ask. Because when people are educated and their hearts are open, something happens to them. They think differently. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping in hearing the stories of couples, it doesn't matter what your sector. This is the journey of people trying to love one another in a pretty fractured culture. And how do you do it? And how might we learn together? Mm-hmm. And because for me, again, it's the heterosexism that's institutionalized. And so I'm not naive, I guess, about that, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
It changed institutional heterosexism, which still says that really heterosexual relationships are more than. And know that that's the thing mm-hmm. that I want to see changed. How do we open people's hearts and minds that we institutionally change them as well as individuals? And it begins with individuals.
And on that note, the seven commissioners, do you have confidence that they will evaluate the charges against you, not with a concern for how it might impact members of the congregations, but with a true sense of the message of Christ and consistency with the love that he preached?
Well, I think that's their duty. That's what they're called to do in taking that position, is to listen fairly and to be open and to really listen to the stories
mm-hmm.
and to really see, to take all that into consideration as they move forward. And I can hope for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hope for.
And Scott, what is your sense? Will it be a decision made mm-hmm. to defend the institution and to protect those who are in denial? Or will it be one that really, what the, you know, Janie's interpretation of the message of God?
What we really hope for is that this gives the church, through this local judicial body, the opportunity to live into its values. And in something that you said earlier, it gives the church, about Judge Walker's decision, it gives the church the opportunity to acknowledge equality and to reject discrimination. And there is a firm witness for that in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And this, hopefully, when they hear these stories and when they hear about the courage and the faithfulness and the tenderness of Janie's ministry, they will see in that the gospel of Jesus Christ being lived out. And we hope that that will be their decision,
mm-hmm.
is to affirm her ministry and to just reject these charges that should never have been brought.
Mm-hmm. Beb Brewster, your comment?
Oh, I agree with that completely. I think that we feel very optimistic that this is going to be an opportunity to really educate more people about Reverend Spahr's ministry and about bring more people into the light, really, so that we don't have a sense of a church where there are any second-class citizens.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, do you have a anything that you'd like to share on a personal level about what this means to you?
Well, you know, I've joined the Spahr team for the last appeal mm-hmm. in the last case. And there were many amazing parts of that experience. But the one that really stays with me is that when we went to Louisville, which is where that court is, there was a whole community that went. And when Janie and her advocates stood up before the court there, and it's a court of 14 members, so it's a lot of judges up there. She had standing with her the couples whom she had married and a whole community of people. And it was a vibrant, living witness to the church that the decisions that they're making impact and involve real people and real lives, and that they matter. And it was such a powerful experience. So while I just totally believe that these charges never should have been brought and wish they hadn't, I wish that the church from the very beginning was just celebrating the family, the full dignity of the LGBT families. It's just an honor to be a part of this community and to be a part of this witness.
Mm-hmm. And Bev, what does it mean for you?
For me, it's an opportunity to live my values. I just became ordained in the Presbyterian Church last year in 2009. And at that time, I really believed that the provision in our Constitution, which has been used to prevent LGBT candidates from becoming ordained clergy, was about to be repealed. And unfortunately, it was not that provision. The repeal of that provision was not ratified. And we have to start that process again, which we're now underway doing that one more time. But I feel really, I love the Presbyterian Church. I've been a Presbyterian my whole life. I'm proud to be a Presbyterian minister, but only if I can work for full inclusion and full equality in the church can mm-hmm. I remain a Presbyterian minister. And so it's very important to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Janie Spahr, it really is touching to meet you and to feel your conviction and the love that you feel free to extend without limit. And I wish you the best in this proceeding, and I hope that it is something that can ripple beyond the limits of the, 2 to 3 million Presbyterians in the Presbyterian Church USA, and really set an example for the religious communities at large, because we still have a lot of work to do. To open minds and hearts and acknowledge the true equality of every human being and to get beyond the use of religion as a tool for discrimination.
Right. Thank you for having us here, Peter.
Thank you.
It's been a joy to meet you.
Janie Spahr, Scott Clark, Bev Brewster, thank you very much for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'd like to hear your comments. Send me an email. You know the address, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you.